Welcome to the Cabin Cast, your getaway primer.
Hey, Eric.
Hello.
I am so excited about the episode that we recorded tonight. We got to interview two ladies that I could not wait to kind of meet in person. And they're an author and a photographer that I have admired for a long time. Chase Reynolds Ewald and Audrey Hall have collaborated on 6 books together that I consider them must-haves for cabin owners, cabin dreamers, cabin visitors, anyone who just loves the cabin lifestyle. These books are full of inspiration. They're full of ideas about architecture, everything from how to build your house on the land and how you think about that to the little details of the decorating and all the thought that needs to go into it. And they're just beautifully written, beautifully photographed. And both Audrey and Chase are wonderful to talk to. They have great stories and a lot of depth. So one of my favorites of their books is called American Rustic. And we'll talk a lot about this book in the interview too. But I love in the introduction how Chase defines what that means, what American Rustic is. Characterized by humble materials and honest construction techniques, American Rustic design is timeless in its appeal. It is aspecific to any time period, yet it is always rooted in place. It goes beyond speaking of a region. It is a product of its immediate vicinity and its unique microclimate. In recent years, the style has evolved, but it remains as appealing as ever. The enduring attraction of cozy log cabins with cave-like interiors and heavy furnishings is tempered by a current desire for cleaner lines, good quality of light, and most of all, an original approach. American Rustic presents a fresh, contemporary take on rustic design. From rural compounds in upstate New York and Santa Fe casitas to mountain lodges along the spine of the Rockies and throughout the greater Yellowstone. The projects in the pages of this book represent a myriad of approaches from the genre's top designers. The resulting homes are as individual as their owners and designers, and they speak to the landscape in which they are sited. And I know as we hear from people who are designing cabins or finding their dream one that already exists, that is what matters to them so much, is finding something that's as individual as they are. So excited to share this interview.
Yeah. And it's so fantastic to have two different people working in different mediums, a writer and a photographer, and how they collaborate so well together and they tie things in. And they're going to talk about, you know, what is it, the writing that comes first or the photography, or how they tie it all in together to create these beautiful books, and how they may be coffee table books in a sense, but the writing is so informative and interesting that you end up, you know, taking it back to the, you know, if you're at a cabin visiting someone, that's the book you pick up off the coffee table, take it back to the room and read, you know, read later, yeah. Late into the night. So,
right. Yeah. I think their collaboration together is one of the most interesting parts of the interview, to hear what they can come up with together, and just, it's apparent how much they love to learn. So I just am fascinated through the whole conversation.
Yeah. And they were super generous with their time. So this is actually going to be a 2-part interview. So we're going to share part one with them. That you'll hear about their backgrounds, where they came from, their, how they work together, their collaboration style. And then in part two, which will come out next week, you're going to hear even more detail, and you'll hear about some of the beautiful areas that they'd live. Of course, their, you know, perfect cabin day, and, you know, all the things that go along with that. But they were so generous and so wonderful and thoughtful in this interview. I know our listeners are going to love it.
Yep, it's going to become a favorite for sure.
So without further ado, enjoy our interview. Thank you. right. We have two amazing guests to bring you today. The first is Chase Reynolds Ewald. She's been writing about art, travel, design, food, people, and Western lifestyle for more than 25 years. She's a contributing editor to Western Art and Architecture magazine, the design columnist for Big Sky Journal, and the author of 14 books. Her book, American Rustic, a collaboration with photographer, and our other guest, Audrey Hall, was named one of the 14 best home design books of 2015 by Architectural Digest.
Audrey Hall is known for her poignant landscapes and ethereal equine images. Her first trip to the American West as a young girl made a lifelong impression, and she keeps one toe in Montana and another in Santa Fe, considering the West home and profoundly inspiring to her personal work. Born in Brazil, Audrey grew up in a multicultural family deeply rooted in both arts and sciences. A Rotary Scholar, she studied fine art photography under Thomas Joshua Cooper at the renowned Glasgow School of Art in Scotland. The diversity of her upbringing and education continue to influence her today in both her passions for technology and tradition. So welcome, Chase and Audrey.
Thank you.
Thank you
for having us.
Yeah, we're happy to be here.
Well, I said this today on my Instagram stories, and I'm fangirling a little bit here because I have had your books on my coffee table for years, and I sell them in my shop, and they are the best-selling books we have. American Rustic is, I can't keep it in stock. So I'm just so excited to get to know you better and learn more about your prolific work and how you guys collaborate together. So I'd love to just hear from each of you just a little bit more about your background and how you ended up where you are today. So Chase, do you want to just start and let us know a little more of your story?
Sure. I am an East Coast girl from Connecticut, but I, as a kid, spent a lot of time in the rural parts of Vermont and in the Green Mountains there in a beautiful traditional area where time has really stood still even today. And I think that influenced me a lot. So when I had the opportunity at age 10 to go to camp in Wyoming, I grabbed it and spent 3 summers sort of living in a cabin and looking at the mountains every morning and going out into nature, you know, all day, every day, and spending a lot of time with horses and backpacking and canoeing and smelling the sagebrush. And my life was never the same because I always wanted to be in Wyoming after that. And I've been kind of lived on both coasts and in the Rocky Mountain West. And I live on the West Coast now, but most of my work has to do with the Rocky Mountain region, particularly the greater Yellowstone area, which is Audrey and I both are kind of all over the map, literally and figuratively, yeah. But we both have a sort of emotional center in the Yellowstone area.
Okay. And Audrey, how about you?
So I really didn't have a choice in the matter of coming out west. My dad brought us out, piled us in a station wagon. My mom probably kicking and screaming because I was born in Brazil. My mother's Brazilian. My father taught in Brazil for many, many years through a United Nations program. And then he moved us to America when I started school so I could have an education in the United States. And we moved to Ann Arbor, Michigan. And his favorite place in the whole wide world was Yellowstone. My mother is very chic. She doesn't go anywhere without her heels and her nails done and is very put together. And so I don't know if she knew exactly what she was getting into when he threw us in this, you know, in the station wagon and hauled us out west. But we both fully embraced it. My mom was there, you know, fishing and gold panning in her heels and attended every fish fry and absolutely loved Yellowstone and the greater Yellowstone area. And for me as a young girl, I was just in heaven. I mean, I was very much a tomboy, very much much to the dismay of my mother. She was always like, why aren't you wearing a dress? Or, you know, are you really wearing those shoes? But I was happiest, you know, kind of gallivanting with the animals and in nature. And I just, my favorite memories are fishing with my dad and doing these crazy 4-wheel drive Jeep trips into the mountains, which we actually redid or we went to a place that I went when I was maybe 7 or 8 in a Willys with my parents one day. And we took my niece and nephew this last summer. And it was really funny because I thought, I don't even know how we arrived at the lake when I was 8. And I certainly was wondering how we arrived at the lake current day in like the most fancy sort of ATV, which I'd never driven. It was honestly kind of terrifying. And I thought, wow, you know, my memory of it was just like, it was great. Like I loved it. And we still have photos. I mean, I have all the photos from that trip. And I think that going in current times with my niece and nephew and my husband and my in-laws, his sister and her husband, who are flatlanders, you know, they live in Kansas. I think everybody was pretty scared and surprised. And it made an impression, but I'm not sure it made the same impression as when I was, when I was 7 or 8.
Hey, it's Kristen. I'm here to tell you about White Arrows Home. White Arrows Home is a lifestyle brand that shares a warm and cozy mix of design ideas, inspirational style, and personal journeys from the backdrop of the Wisconsin Northwoods and my lakeside log cabin home. I love sharing daily inspiration for you on my blog, through social media, and in my shop. At White Arrows Home, you can shop in person in the store, but also online from anywhere. You'll find a mix of antique, vintage, and new furniture, accessories, and gifts carefully curated to fit our brand of classy cabin and cottage decor, campy style, and always a heavy sprinkling of plaids. New products come in the shop daily with decor that will let you bring Northwoods living into your own home and style spaces that are inviting, beautiful, and make family and friends want to linger longer.
You know, reading your websites, your blogs, articles, books, you know, getting ready for this interview and trying to learn more about you guys, I already thought you were fascinating and had, you know, so much adventurous spirits and your thirst for learning new things. But now I'm picturing this all in like a movie, like how you guys grew up and then came together to collaborate. I mean, wow, what great stories and great beginnings. How did you come together and meet each other and decide to work together?
I'll kick it off, Audrey. So I was living in Cody, Wyoming, just east of Yellowstone, and Audrey was in Livingston, Montana, just north of Yellowstone, and she was photographing for magazines, among other things, and I was writing for magazines, among other things, and we were writing and photographing for a lot of the same publications, and, you know, it's not that big a world. You sort of start to, even before the internet really was connecting us all the way it is now, we were aware of who else was in our sphere in that way. And then we got to know each other in person through some, you know, just sort of arts related events and the kind of things that bring people together in our world, like the Western Design Conference in Cody in the early 90s. And we started writing for a new magazine at the same time, Western Interiors and Design, and, you know, got to know each other personally over time. And at some point, the subject of doing a book together came up. And much to my amazement and delight, Audrey said she would be delighted to do a book together, which was great. So that had been a goal of mine. I'd done a few books, four already. But I'd never had a dedicated photographer other than myself on my first two books. And, you know, the books are only as strong as the team. So right. That had been my goal. And to get someone like Audrey to be willing to commit to a whole book with me was really a wonderful moment.
So it seems like maybe collaborating on a book like that, in my mind, it seems like writing a song almost, right? You have the lyrics and the music, right, that goes with it. And you have these photography and the writing, and pairing it together and tying it all in is such a creative way to collaborate. Like they're two different medias and they're two different mediums, and they, in your books, they flow so well together. Can you talk a little bit about working together? And is it I mean, is it a chicken and the egg thing? Like, do you have these photography and then you write about it? Is there writing and then photography to tie in? How does that work?
Well, it's a very fluid process. And I think that one of the really wonderful things about collaborating is that both of our professions are relatively solitary. You know, when Chase sits down to write, she's probably typically alone at her desk. And many times when I'm photographing, I'm alone with my camera wherever I am. I mean, occasionally I might have one or two other people with me, but for the most part, so, you know, we're solo. And certainly when I'm editing and, you know, doing all of the front end or back end things that need to happen for a photo shoot. So one of the lovely things about collaboration is being able to work jointly with somebody else on sort of a same project or the same endeavor and, you know, suffer some of the same frustrations or, you know, hold each other's hands as we're like moving through deadlines or keep each other motivated as we're editing layouts, all those things that are really, really hard to do by yourself. But when you have a compadre to help you get through the whatever it is that needs to be done, it's really great. Selfishly, I think that because I think so many times when we've been going through layouts, you know, and we're at page, you know, 92 of 274, and, you know, we're both like, oh my gosh, how are we going to get through this? It's like we're able to energize each other in the process. Mm-hmm. And that kind of happens start to finish with the book. You know, and having the same goals. So it's really a lot of fun. And it's great to do something with somebody else versus just being by yourself.
Absolutely. And as far as the chicken and the egg question, it depends what we're working on. One of our very first projects together was a cookbook. And for that, it was, you know, that's a different animal altogether because you have recipes and then you have narrative and we had chef interviews and things like that. And some of the shoots I did with Audrey, some of them I wasn't there. And so we could both work in our own silos coming together occasionally. When it comes to the design books that we've done a number of, I would never try to write without the photographs unless I've been to the house. Sometimes I've been to the property and sometimes I haven't. But even if I've been there, I still need the photos. Because Audrey does an amazing job capturing what the creatives behind the project, the architects, the designers, the landscape architects, the builders, what they were really trying to achieve. And she's really, really good at, largely because she grew up with an architect father and an architect stepfather and studied to be an architect herself and worked as an architect. But she knows, she understands what is special and what they were doing and what they achieved. And she's able to capture that in her images. And so it's really helpful to me when I go to write to have her images, even if I've been to the place, because of the way she captures the light and the angles and what she chooses to focus on. It helps me in the writing. And then with our most recent book, which was a total departure, the book on bison, I had seen a lot of her photographs, but we didn't know which ones. I had to write my piece long before we knew which images would be in the book or in which order. And so, again, we were sort of in our separate silos a little bit. And that was just a very different animal, forgive the pun, in the sense that, you know, I did just read a ton of books and interviewed a ton of people and thought a lot about bison from, you know, prehistoric to now, and then tried to pull it all together in a 10,000 word essay that did not break into chapters really. And then that had to be paired with Audrey's photographs, which did not go in any particular order. There were no sort of chapters that were distinct from one from the next. So they weren't organized in a structured way. It was much more fluid. So every project's different. And that's what keeps it interesting.
Right. So do you go to your publisher, Gibbs Smith, correct? and say, here, we've got an idea to do cabin style book? Or do they come to you because they know of your writing and say, we have this idea for this book? How does it kind of start? Or is it brainstorming the two of you together?
Well, in honesty, we sort of don't really know, because many times we will have an idea, we'll go to the publisher, they'll say, great. They'll go to the sales team, and then the sales team will come back and say, well, that's a nice idea, but we really think that X word needs to be in the title. And I'm thinking specifically cabin style.
Yeah.
Because cabin style did not start off as cabin as we did not pitch it as cabin style. Mm-hmm. We pitched it as sort of like living above, you know, living at 10,000 feet, sort of the idea of like mountain houses. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they said, great. And we said, great. And then we had a follow-up email that said, you know, the sales team really feels like the name, the word cabin or the word rustic needs to be in the title. And Chase and I kind of laughed because we'd just done two rustic books. And there were zero cabins that I had photographed to date for the next book. And so we thought, well, let's mull it over a little bit and see, you know, kind of what happens in the next few months. And oddly enough, everything that started coming my way into my field of vision and into Chase's field of vision were cabins. And so we looked at each other and we thought, well, I guess this is a cabin book.
Right. Yeah.
You know, and that's certainly not what we set out. You know, that wasn't our intention. So, but that was, and, you know, that's how it ended up being, or that's what it came to be. The other books we all pitched and sort of stayed pretty true to what we wanted to do, starting with the cookbook idea that Chase had, which was our first collaboration. Then we did the New Western Home, which was sort of, you know, that was a kind of an open concept. We just thought, well, what is Western living like right now? Mm-hmm. Then we went into American Rustic, which was really, we had seen a lot of rustic books. We felt like the genre had evolved, mm-hmm, and had modernized. And we found that to be really interesting. Mm-hmm. So the idea for American Rustic was to do a coast-to-coast overview of this, what the interpretation of rustic, you know, now, sort of beyond buffalo plaid and, you know, moose mounts.
Right.
And when we were selecting projects for American Rustic, we intended to bring a lot of variety that was within the genre. Mm-hmm. So that was pretty true to what we set out to do, mm-hmm, I feel like.
Yeah. Yeah. And rustic modern was also. And then the Bison book came out of a suggestion our publisher made to Audrey for something quite different, similar, but they really were interested in an equine book. And Audrey got thinking about it and thought, there are many beautiful books about celebrating horses in the world, but there aren't really enough, and there aren't any that are really what we would do about the bison, about this, mm-hmm, iconic American animal. So that one kind of was inspired by a suggestion for something quite different.
And there's so many different icons in the West. It's kind of amazing that the West has continued to hold such a sense of adventure, and they talk about it as frontier still, and where, you know, really we've explored so much of the United States, but the West holds such a special place in the nation's kind of mind and the nation's eye. Why do you think the West still holds such a sense of adventure? Is it like the openness, the wide open spaces? What do you think it is about the West? And, you know, something like the bison that still captures people.
Well, certainly it's still, a lot of it is derives from the huge, you know, the filmmaking industry and TV shows, you know, from less sort of our generation down, but certainly our parents' era you know, in the 50s and 60s and on. And obviously, Westerns are still a huge, you know, part of the entertainment landscape. And yeah, so there's all that that, you know, between the scenery and the sort of sense of freedom and the idea of these open road and, you know, the mountains and just the sort of great distances between settled spaces. It just represents so much to our country in our sort of national lore, I think, in terms of what's possible. And
well, I think the national parks, the whole idea of westward expansion and homesteading, the Homestead Act, probably was like the first wave of the idea of frontier. But then you think about the creation of the nations in the world's first national park, and then all the national parks that were created after that predominantly are in the West. Mm-hmm. You know, think of, you know, all the parks in Utah and Arizona and California and Montana and Wyoming, Glacier, Grand Teton, Yellowstone, Bryce, Monument Valley, Arches National Park, Yosemite. They're mostly in the West. And you think about the sheer size of many of these parks, Yellowstone being over 2 million acres, right?
Yeah.
Wow. And then all the other public land, the National Forest and Wilderness, Absaroka Beartooth, Gallatin National Forest, Custer Forest. I mean, there is a lot of public land for people to explore. And I think because of that, because it's not all developed, it's not all ski resorts and hotels and cities, that there's a lot of rural areas, many, many Native American tribal lands. It's pretty vast if you think about it when you go west of the Mississippi. And I feel because of that, because so many people go to recreate, go west to fulfill a lifelong dream, tick something off their bucket list, change their life. I mean, Georgia O'Keeffe went west to New Mexico to change her life when she'd suffered some personal and work setbacks in New York City. I feel like there's a lot of stories that are really similar of people leaving the East and going west, and that hasn't stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Certainly we're feeling it with COVID.
Yeah.
Like a new westward expansion.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's happening like right now.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the other thing about you mentioned the national parks and the national forests and all the, you know, Bureau of Land Management. I mean, we're talking millions and millions and millions of acres that are owned by us. And so there's that too, you know, like we have this shared heritage that's largely concentrated in the West in those big open spaces.
Yeah, I saw a shirt the other day. Somebody had a public land owner shirt that was pretty awesome. Just the idea that we all share something together and experience it in so many different ways, recreationally or hunting or any of those things, is a really special thing that I don't think happens in every country in the world, for sure. The Cabin Cast is brought to you by Roughing It in Style. On The Cabin Cast, we talk a lot about making memories. But what makes a home or getaway more likely to create those cherished times? The Interiors team at Roughing It in Style is here to help you find that perfect memory-making balance in your home. The balance between gathering and privacy, form and function, relaxation and entertaining. We have two showrooms stocked with furniture, decor, and lighting. Our Up North store is in Harshaw, Wisconsin, 10 miles south of Minocqua. And our Out West store sits on the doorstep of the Rockies in Fort Collins, Colorado. Find out more and plan your visit today at roughingitinstyle.com.
Well, in talking about your different books you've done together, talk about the difference between photographing, writing about animals compared to interior. I mean, that's a very different way of photographing, I'm assuming, Audrey, and kind of putting the book together, Chase. What are some of your different approaches when you went to doing live animals and doing interior shots?
I think there's actually more similarities than one would think, because in both cases, you're really striving to tell a story. And it sort of starts with like the broader overview, like the bird's eye view. And then you drill down into something more intimate. And I tried to do that with bison, as I do with architecture. Mm-hmm. Architecture always, you know, for me begins with the bird's eye view or the environmental view. Like, where does the house sit and what does that say about the place? And then you drill down into the textures and the intimacy of the spaces. And I tried to look at the bison in that same sense, and using things like light and season and texture and color and composition and the variety, like knowing how a book comes together and really knowing that the voice of the photographs need a cadence, and that cadence is built with multiple perspectives. So the process is intellectually is really similar. I mean, when you get out in the field though, and you're running after bison in Lord knows what weather, that's very different on some level than houses. But intellectually, I approached the subjects in a pretty similar way.
I know one thing that I've loved about your books is that they're beautiful coffee table books. They're ones anybody can pick up when they come stay at your cabin and look through. They're great for helping design your dream cabin and spaces because they're so full of ideas. But they also read so beautifully, Chase. You can sit down and just devour the stories you have inside of them too. When Audrey was talking about how she looks at the photography, I can see that in your writing too. You know, you have a lot of those, the smaller details and stories about the spaces, along with the big picture of where they are and how they fit in the landscape and those things. They're just beautiful to curl up with and read.
Oh, thank you. Well, I often joke, you know, at book signings or something, I say, well, you know, no one really reads coffee table books. And then when people don't laugh, I think, wait a minute. I didn't mean that, actually. Some people read them. I hope people read them. But I do try to make the captions interesting just in case people only read the captions. But thank you for saying that. When I first was writing magazine articles and even my first books, I was more focused on art and traditional craft. And I realized that everything I've done has really been in some way about the artistic process, maybe less the bison, although we certainly brought some art into that. But, you know, to me, the story of a house is also the story of an artistic process. And, you know, I talk to whichever parties are willing to be interviewed. Sometimes the homeowner is, and sometimes they aren't. Generally, I speak to the architects, the designer, the builder, and sometimes the landscape architect. And, you know, you listen to what they have to say, and then you sort of think about it and let it gel, and then pull together, you know, what's most interesting and what tells the story of the inspiration behind the home. And of course, the projects, we are so lucky to get to write and photograph the homes that we do, because they're all in very beautiful places and they're all very thoughtfully conceived and built. And, you know, so all of them start with place, and it's always about what is the landscape, what is the setting, and what are they trying to achieve, and how are they managing the elements and things like that. And then you go inside and look at all the accoutrement, all the accessories and the art and the everything else. But it starts and ends with place, most of these homes we feature. And like Audrey's process, it's fairly organic. You start outward and move in and try to pull together the story of all these people's artistic inspiration.
Yeah, it's so interesting with our interior design that we do when we go into a home and try and capture the feel of the home that you feel when you're in the space physically. It's really difficult because if you shoot a photo or talk to somebody about it and you see the broad picture, it doesn't capture it as well as, like you have both mentioned, like drilling down and getting the detail of the space, like more of what your eyes would see and what you'd be drawn to versus just like, boo, here's the whole room. Look at everything in it. It's like those, my favorite photos and my favorite descriptions of things are like very magnified in and focused on, it might be like the nail heads on a sofa with a photo in the background, or the shot of just the fireplace, right? Where in the things that are around it, the fireplace tools and those, like those evoke such a wonderful feeling versus the entire thing all at once. I think that's really special. And the books, you know, really capture that feeling.
Thanks.
Thank you.
They're coffee table books, but I think that the magic of having Chase be such a brilliant writer and capture the story so well, that if you're seeking information and inspiration, sure, you can look at the photos, but there's so much that's revealed in these interviews and texts. So it's basically like being able to go into every architect and interior designer's studio and tap them on the shoulder and just ask them all these questions about how did you do this and why did you choose that? Because when you're doing it for yourself, your family, like you have all those questions.
Yep.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's not just, you know, fabric selection or like picking art or pillows. There's so much thought that goes into the design of homes, of how they're oriented, how they, you know, deal with the elements. Like, it's just countless things. So it's like this little treasure trove of opportunity to be able to have it in your lap. You can read about all of these deliberations and choices and why designers, architects, interior designers and builders and owners, sort of their thought process and why they did what they did. Mm-hmm. And what were the challenges? What worked really well? What did they have to move through? So, and to me, that's like the great parts of the story that the photos just don't reveal.
Yeah, so true. So you guys have seen so many cabins. What are some of the favorite, you know, either whether it's most creative or why didn't I think of that? You know, what are some of the most special things you've seen from the cabins that you've photographed and written about?
Audrey, I'm thinking about the hot springs, the cabin and with the natural hot springs in Idaho. It's in northern Idaho. And Audrey got to spend some time there. And one thing I love about it, it's a compound, and the owner built herself a very small cabin. And I love that. It's just so refined and so unpretentious, just very, very sort of, I hate to say zen, you know, it's just got that just sort of this feeling of wellness about it. And it's all just very modest on the landscape. And Audrey got to photograph there. I didn't get to visit that one, but they make use of the natural hot springs in various ways, which Audrey, you can speak to. That's one. There's so many, but that's one that was special.
Yeah, that's that amazing. One was really, really special. I mean, there's so many for different, that you remember for different reasons. Mm-hmm. I did, my first book that I did was called Old Wood, New Home. And it was a collection of cabins by a specific builder and craftsman. And they all used recycled wood. And it was all beautiful and textural. But I remember, and I was shooting film back then, I remember that all my exposures were like 8 seconds, 10 seconds, 12 seconds. That even if there was a lot of windows, that they were still like these really, really long exposures. And what I realized is that light was not really bouncing in the space. Like light was being absorbed by these darker palettes. So there's been a movement to sort of rethink a lot of the cabins that were maybe built in the 80s and 90s, for example, that are kind of similar. That the first one I walked into it, that the interiors team painted the entire thing. They just took all the wood and they painted it white. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I remember walking in and thinking, wow, this is just such a different, it's such a different feeling. Mm-hmm. Walking into a cabin that's really light and bright versus sort of dim, like cozy and dark and, you know, like dark, rich fabrics and dark wood and everything's dark. Even if there's giant windows, it's still dark. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So things like that really strike me. When somebody kind of goes out on a limb, and to me, like a lot of people think that's so crazy. You painted all that wood white. Like, why would you do that? But in essence, it's memorable. And I think that if you're living in a cabin 24/7, 365 days a year, that it would come with its benefit, especially in the northern climates where in the wintertime, the sun doesn't get very high in the sky and the days are really short. So you crave light. And if you're in a really dark space, I think sometimes winters might be feel longer since it would be even darker. Mm-hmm. So it's interesting, you know, the cabins that are built as retreats versus the cabins that are lived in year round, you know, and the differences in those. The cabins that are at elevation versus homes that are built in lower and milder climates. It's, you know, there's a lot of things that stand out when you start traveling around and visiting all the different locations and the way people build and interpret and adapt for the climate and the seasons.
That sounds like a whole book right there, too. That is so fascinating. Yeah.
I think, Chase, you had spoke earlier about the differences in how your books, Rustic Modern and American Rustic, were about the changes and the things that, you know, it's not just your traditional log cabin that, you know, that you saw before. What are some of the differences that you are seeing? And they might not even be trends, because I think when you look at the whole U.S., there's so many different regions and pockets where styles kind of stick to. What are you seeing change in the landscape that was worth highlighting and hitting in your books?
Well, I feel like the biggest thing that's pretty universal is enhancing the indoor-outdoor connection, opening up the spaces both, you know, inside, as in more open plan sort of arrangements inside, but mainly the connection to the outdoors being just enhanced and augmented with, you know, there's all this new technology, better door and window systems that allow this, even in the more harsh climates and the high altitude sites. And so, you know, if there's finding a way to open the house up to the views and nature as much as possible without sacrificing completely a feeling of coziness and refuge, that has been, you know, that's the goal for, I feel like it's a pretty universal desire for obvious reasons. It's really the best of both worlds. If you can still have, you know, the comfort and coziness of a cabin, but not have it dark and closed off. And you still, the reason you're there is because of the outdoors typically. And a lot of these places have extraordinary views of mountains, or they're on lakes, or yet they often have harsh climates as well. So I feel like that's the single most trend. I don't want to call it a trend. It's just an evolution.
Yeah, that's cool. That's a great idea. So it's like, instead of the home being a shelter from the elements, it's like you're trying to embrace the land around you and enjoy the space while still getting, you know, the real shelter that you need. And that's kind of amazing that technology's catching up to that human need or desire.
Mm-hmm. Well, for sure. I mean, you look at old homestead cabins and, you know, the logs are very thick, the windows are very small, and they're still cold and have a lot of insects. like lots of lies. So some of these adaptions are really behind the scene, like behind what you could see. So we know there's an architect that JLF and Associates, they're the founder of JLF and Associates way back when, sort of the person who really like introduced the concept of restacking homestead cabins into modern design. And one of the things that they can do is split the logs and add a layer of insulation before like restacking it to make it like super insulated and also keep a lot of the pests out. There's been, as Chase said, like huge strides in glass, yeah, in windows and weatherproofing, and these incredible like accordion door, glass doors. I mean, JLF is also like building dining rooms over water features, mm-hmm, that the entire walls open and you can have, you know, dinner over like a small babbling water feature that feels like, you know, like a pond or a stream and be really in the elements. I think that we're also seeing a much more integration with landscape architects, mm-hmm, and pretty amazing water and landscape features and integration of that, that, you know, you wouldn't necessarily have seen 30 or 40 years ago, you know, and certainly not when people were coming out west initially and putting up homestead cabins.
So if you could have your dream cabin, where would it be and what would yours have? Hot springs.
Oh, I don't know. I feel like I'm pretty lucky living where I am. So I would feel selfish wanting more.
So what lives where you are perfect.
I mean, I think that I would love to. What's really fun for me, because I live in the West, you know, pretty much all the time, except I might, you know, I travel for work, but my roots in my studio and the archive and where I kind of land between jobs is in Montana and in a very, you know, a very beautiful part of Southwest Montana. So what's fun for me is visiting and staying in other locales. Like, I think my idea, like, I love my husband and I did a hike to Granite Park Chalet and Glacier, which is sort of a hike in, and you don't have to take any bedding. They have like these little bunks and you tell them what you want for dinner and everything's in the kitchen. So, you know, you show up and all your ingredients there and you cook in this communal kitchen. And so I more and more reach for experiences like that, that, mm-hmm, are really unique, like going to dude ranches and doing, you know, visiting this National Park Chalet. And I love visiting the national parks. I mean, one of my favorite things in the whole wide world is going to Old Faithful in the dead of winter and staying in the snow lodge. There's something about the national park experience that's really great. So I feel like at this point in time, like, I'm more of a seeker of experiences, mm-hmm, versus, you know, like, oh, I want to have like one place in one place that I go to all the time.
Right.
If that makes sense.
It does. And it sounds wonderful too. Yeah. How about you, Chase?
Well, I don't live in Paradise Valley. I live in a really beautiful place, but it's not in the mountains and it's not cabin-like. My dream would be to have a small, modestly scaled, rustic, modern cabin in a mountain setting. Probably not. Although I love to ski and I love all these homes built on the sides of mountains, I also love summer and horses. And so my dream would be, you know, to be in a fairly remote mountain valley on the edge of the national forest, somewhere near Yellowstone, the greater Yellowstone ecosystem in Wyoming or Montana, and have, you know, sort of the open meadows and a river or creek and ideally horses and mountains all around and trailheads nearby that you could just head into the wilderness on a pack trip and ride for days.
I like how both of you think. Yeah. Sounds great. Yeah, that's awesome.
do you have an, are you guys working on the next project together? Are you guys, what's kind of coming down the pipes for both of you?
We have been asked that quite often since spring, since the release of Bison. And I think that, like, we have some ideas kicking around. We've definitely taken a big collective deep breath, especially Chase, because Bison wasn't the only book that she did on deadline at the same time. Chase had two other books come out at the same time as Bison. I don't know how she did it. She's like Superwoman, Wonder Woman in the book world. She had Modern Americana and At Home in Wine Country.
Wow.
Basically They're on deadline too. with Bison. So I think Chase needs to, she's probably taking a big, I know I'm taking a deep breath. I'm sure Chase is taking a huge, huge breath, but we do have some ideas that we're kicking around. We just haven't quite gotten to the point of pitching it.
Yeah. Oh, that makes sense for sure.
But we're close. And it's been complicated with coronavirus.
Yeah.
Frankly.
Yeah.
You know, Bison was the perfect project because I could be in a, I mean, I wasn't around anybody. I was in, you know, the landscape with animals, and Chase was able to write, do the interviews and the writing from her office.
Yeah.
So it was one of those projects that, you know, could be done in a pandemic. And the design books, it's more complicated because of the travel and the interaction with people and owners. And, you know, it's like, we're kind of sensitive to that. So I think we haven't been like rushing out with the next pitch because we've been sort of putting the books that we have into the world, which takes a lot of time and thought. And so I don't know, Chase, do you have anything?
Well, I will remind you, we were on the brink of doing a really exciting project, but it was travel related. And then we were really quite close to, we were doing this in conjunction with a third party, and it was ambitious and it was exciting and a departure from what we've been doing together, but a subject kind of dear to both of us and a place that was important to both of us. And then the pandemic hit and travel, luxury or otherwise, stopped overnight. So that one just got put on the shelf.
Yeah.
So yeah. So I think we've been waiting for the dust to settle a little bit.
Sure. Sure. Yeah. And people have had such a sense of almost forced solitude. It's interesting. And it's bled so much into our businesses and, you know, rustic living and cabin living, where there's been this entire renewed interest in getting away from large population centers and maybe a more permanent sense. It doesn't seem to be, you know, as things stretch on, it'll be interesting to see how hard that sticks. But I noticed that even generationally, like the different generations that we've historically dealt with furnishing getaways and cabins, the spread is so much wider now. There's young couples that are finding getaways when usually it was leaning more towards families with older children or retirees getting places for their extended families. But now even young couples with young children are finding places to remodel or find. And it's just so great that there's resources that you both put together for people for inspiration. And I think that's special because people need that. They need the ability to look at other things out there and maybe not just the, you know, the things that the algorithms constantly throw at you in social media, right? You see the same things pop up all the time. It's really great to open a book and look at something that is more physical and you can spend more time focusing. There's no distractions going on when you're reading a great, great book on that. So I think that it's so helpful to have that.
Be sure to tune in next week for part two of our conversation with Chase and Audrey.
Thanks so much for listening to this episode of the Cabin Cast. You can find details and more information in the show notes on our website at www.thecabincast.com. Be sure to subscribe wherever you listen so you won't miss a single episode. Follow us on your favorite social media channels. You can find us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter at The Cabin Cast. We'd also love to hear from you. We want to hear your getaway and cabin stories. For a chance to have your story featured on an upcoming episode, email us at getaway@thecabincast.com. Until next week, enjoy the journey.